So good afternoon. This is Caroline Tapkin for Travel Daily Asia and Travel Daily's Inspiring Women in Travel Asia interview series. Today we have with us Minu. So Minu, welcome, and please introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what you do.
Hi, Caroline. Thank you for inviting me to this conversation. I'm Minu Chawla. I'm the founder of Roadswell Travels Advisory, through which I work as a consultant for destination and tourism product development. I'm based in Bangalore, India.
Okay, so how did you get into that?
Well, I started my career in traditional management consulting in Germany after my master's degrees. I went on to work at Microsoft India in finance and strategy before founding the first version of Roadswell Traveled, which was at the time an e-commerce platform for museum quality, artisan made craft products from around the world. So it was still travel driven. It arrived. It allowed me to travel a lot. And I have to say it was perhaps the ulterior motive there in founding the venture. But at the time, the company explored the world through artisan traditions and crafts that have stood the test of time. And we achieved that through an online shop and a virtual museum. Now, it was only in 2016, so fairly recently, that I entered the traditional tourism industry when I started working at the Ras Al Khaimah Tourism Development Authority in the UAE. I worked in the destination strategy and tourism product development function. And in that capacity, I had the opportunity to work on several exciting projects. The headline project for me was, for instance, as the project manager of the world's longest zip line. Now, it was a challenging project, and I saw it through the entire life cycle from the inception, the concept stage, all the way to creating it and then handing it over to operations. But it was the early stage part, the destination strategy level, that I found the most exciting and fulfilling. So when I returned to India a couple of years ago, I decided to try and create my future career paths inspired by that. Now, I was working at the government in the UAE. It's close to impossible, actually, to find the same context in India and work for the government in the tourism sector. So the best I could think of at the time was to try and do similar work in India and abroad, of course, as an independent consultant.
Let's stop there a minute. Back up a little bit. Sure. So how does a girl from India who studied management consulting and strategy get a job in Ras Al Khaimah for the Ras Al Khaimah Tourism Authority?
Actually, I have to thank a woman for that, to be honest. My former boss, when I learned of the role, I applied through LinkedIn, the generic path. And my former boss, she invited me to an interview. And during the interview, of course, she discovered I had no background whatsoever in tourism, no education in tourism. But she took a chance on me and she hired me in. And against the advice of the HR, I found out eventually. But she saw the potential in me and hired me in. And I hope that I proved her right when she hired me. But I have her to thank for to put me on this path and help me find my future path as well.
What qualities do you think that you demonstrated that made her take that chance on you? I mean, HR, if we don't tick HR's boxes, they discount. So what made you stand out?
So I was definitely entrepreneurial. I mentioned Roadswell Traveled, the former version of it, the e-commerce website. She saw that drive in me to start something up from scratch, which is what was needed at Ras Al Khaimah at the time, because it was like a startup government organization trying to build tourism up from scratch. She perhaps also saw in me that I was able to, identify that DNA of a destination, the potential in a destination, because it was a green field of sorts. There was nothing there. And we had to, come up with, use our creativity, use our analytical skills, of course, but also come up with ideas to put Ras Al Khaimah on the world map as a destination.
So the clear message there is actually don't discount yourself just because you don't have the direct experience.
Precisely.
If you believe in something, go for it.
Yes.
Well, that's amazing. So you've moved from Ras Al Khaimah back to India, and what are you doing now?
So, like I said, a couple of years ago, I started Roadswell Travel Advisory. I kept the name because I loved, the name of the startup that I had earlier. So Roadswell Travel Advisory, as it is now, is 2 years old. And in the past 2 years, I've worked on several exciting projects. I've been very lucky because, the last 2 years have also been COVID and, being holed up at homes and tourism taking the biggest hit. But I've been very lucky, but also the choice of working at early stage, at strategy level, at planning level. So while the operations have halted all over the world, people are not giving up on tourism. People are still thinking of what we would do once we come back, once we bounce mm-hmm. back and tourism comes back to normal, whatever that might be. So in the last 2 years, I've worked with a multilateral development bank, the Asian Development Bank, on a tourism strategy update for the Buddhist tourism circuit in India and Nepal. I worked with startups and private investors in India and abroad at early stage strategy or concept level, concept development level projects. I've worked with, currently I'm working on a strategy project for a GCC country's tourism department. So it's the government of a GCC country. So it's all diverse, but early stage strategy work. And I find that very exciting.
And do you have a team around you or how do you work?
It's a very lean setup. I have a network of other consultants who I bring into projects when needed based on their expertise. So it's either that or, other consultants include me in their projects. And that's how I got my first, the project with the Asian Development Bank, where a senior consultant, a veteran in the tourism industry who I'm familiar with, he brought me into the project and opened up that world for me.
That's fantastic. So there's a lot of networking. Or how have you met these people? How have you come into contact with these people?
Sometimes it's just, old contacts from my past work. Sometimes it's establishing new contacts. So a couple of years ago, I did a little bit of a trip around India where I met with friends of friends or people in my extended network. And I would just sit down with them and talk with them and find where we have synergies, where we have common interests, but, largely working in tourism. So that's how it worked. And I have, I have now friends, cheerleaders oftentimes. We don't look at ourselves as competitors, even though many of us would qualify as competitors to each other.
So it really has been networking and putting yourself out there and talking to people and just finding those connections.
Yes.
How has that been? You mentioned you've worked in Ras Al Khaimah. Mm-hmm. And you're working, you still have projects in the GCC. How are you finding that as a woman working in those areas?
They're definitely different, culturally from what we're used to. But I've always found the cultures to be very open. There's a huge amount of respect for women. That helps. Oftentimes I've also been in situations where, the other culture's been in awe of women, working on such level and demonstrating strength and professionalism. So it's mostly been extremely positive. Also, that world, that part of the world is opening up and gladly so. I've always been received with enthusiasm and respect and openness, actually. So it was pleasantly surprising at the time, but now I'm used to it.
And there's such opportunity for anybody who is good at their job in that part of the world.
Yes.
Tell us about one of your favorite projects.
It would actually have to be the Buddhist Tourism Circuit project, solely because of the amount of impact it would generate. So there are different layers to that project. On one hand, there's a geopolitical aspect to it because, we're talking about two countries, two cross-border regions that are known to be the birthplace of Buddhism. So working on tourism in a cross-border context is actually very exciting. It's rarely done. Imagine a tourism circuit which crosses borders, right? It's really rarely done. So from that aspect and also of geopolitical importance. So, you know, the region is extremely important to India at this point. So that was one layer. But another layer is, you know, this region in India that we're talking about, unfortunately, doesn't rank very high on economic and development indicators. While I was working on this project, another huge problem within this region was brewing, you know, with the background of COVID. So we had a bit of a migrant crisis in the early days of COVID, you know, a huge amount of migrant workers who tend to work in cosmopolitan areas in India, who originally hail from these regions, you know, the disadvantaged regions, had to move back home from Bombay and Delhi and the bigger cities. They had to move back home because of COVID. And this got me thinking about, you know, one of these big problems that India faces, that of migration from, you know, disadvantaged parts of India to other cosmopolitan and areas which seem to have more opportunities. Now, I keep thinking about what if we were to create new destinations in these regions, because there aren't any. There's a lot of tourism value. There's a historical context. There are natural resources in these areas, but they haven't been developed into sustainable tourism destinations. What if we were to create these destinations there? This would give us an opportunity to employ those people, the local communities there, and save them the trouble of leaving their homes and their families to go to other parts of India in order to find employment and livelihood. So we can create job opportunities for them through tourism in their home states. At the same time, if we look at the market level, let's take a step back. COVID has opened us up to domestic tourism, which wasn't quite acknowledged or catered to by the industry in India so far, not adequately. And now all of a sudden, we have this huge mass, this population who has disposable income, can't travel outside of the country, needs to find travel destinations in India. We can create so many new destinations for them. There's this latent potential in India, in several parts of the country, which where you can have new tourism destinations. And when you build them from scratch, you can do so in a sustainable manner. So this is, for example, one thing that you know, that one particular project opened me up to so many thoughts that I keep thinking about. And I hope I could, you know, work on something like that in the near future, you know, working with state governments or the national government at a tourism policy level. So yeah, that was my favorite project for multiple reasons.
That sounds very inspiring. What do you think the future of something like that is? Do you think once we get over this COVID time, people will still travel locally within the country, or will we see an influx out and it'll all just go back to how it was before?
I'm not yet sure. You know, I've seen indications of you know, how people have very quickly shifted back to, you know, pre-COVID habits. For example, in very elementary things like flouting basic mask hygiene. Mm-hmm. I see that around me all the time. So when that fear of COVID disappears, it dissipates, I suspect that things would go back to the way they were. And I fear that because the way things were earlier were not sustainable, especially when it comes to tourism, right? On the other hand, I also see that so many of us would have learned the lesson. And in the last couple of years, I know me and my peer group in India, for instance, my age group with similar income levels, and disposable incomes, we have been opened up to, you know, new destinations within India. We've started admiring our own country as a place to travel to. So I for sure see myself traveling within India a lot, and I would expect my peer group to do the same. So I oscillate between these two you know, possibilities, but I guess eventually it'll be somewhere in the middle.
But presumably as well, it'll attract international interest, because these are new destinations that international visitors can go to.
Yes, and I think the onus for that to really happen lies with the governments, with the state. First of all, developing these new destinations, or at least, you know, encouraging private sector investment. You know, that belongs to the government. Marketing of it belongs to the government. A lot of us at the private level would, you know, once we see the opportunity, you know, we might jump on it and develop new destinations or help develop new destinations. But that high level strategy needs to come from the government. I have seen some indications of that happening in India. There are new destinations being developed. I'm not entirely certain they're following sustainable practices. But there again, there are many factors to look at. So I think there is a trend in that direction. I'm not sure how much of it would actually be implemented along the way.
Time will tell.
Yes.
Yes. What are some of the challenges that you've faced along the way, developing your career the way it's been developed?
So the traditional tourism industry, now here I'll speak of, speak from the perspective of the outsider that I was in 2016, and I still carry some of those impressions from then. I find travel to be an extremely emotional thing. However, when you go into the back end, you know, where the industry works, I feel this loss of that emotion. It's approached as you know, a business, which of course it is, but there's a business-oriented approach to it. Everybody thinks of it as, you know, in terms of a 5 to 6 day package or in terms of developing hotels. But that sense of exploration, the emotion of it, it seems to be missing in the industry, at least the most of what I've seen. And I wish if we were to bring that emotion back, what we're trying to sell to the end consumer, to the traveler, if we were to sort of incorporate that within the industry, the wonder and the awe of the world and presenting it that way, I think the tourism industry would be a much more exciting space to work in.
I think it's one of those things really that you need to take back to its roots. If you just think about hoteliers, they used to stand in the lobby and greet the guests, and it was all very personal. And now they're number crunchers, the general managers. They're not the ones in the lobby, most of them. They're sitting behind the desk. So that awe and wonder has been taken out of the whole thing. So how do we put that back?
I guess by changing the systems a bit, by bringing in innovation into the industry, by gradually changing it for the better. I don't have an answer for that, but that's how I Zoom could, that's something that could work.
You talked previously about destination and product development. Mm-hmm. When you talk about destination development, are you talking about it as a joined up full destination, so where everything works together, rather than this ad hoc here a hotel, there a theme park? How does that work?
So of course, there are so many layers to it. First of all, just the definition of a destination could be many things. It could actually be just a hotel or a resort. It could be an entire country. I believe there really has to be a very informed, concerted effort towards developing a destination, a 360 degree view into it, where not only are you thinking about, you know, an anchor project like a hotel or a resort, or perhaps the world's longest zip line, you know, sure, that could you know, be an anchor project that could kickstart the development of a destination, but also so many different things. How is the community being involved? Tourism and travel so far has only been about the traveler. You know, the customer is king. You're only trying to cater to the traveler. Whereas, the community, the local community has only been the supplier in a way, oftentimes at their own detriment. So that's what we see, you know, with over tourism, for instance. So one aspect that we absolutely have to take care of is what does the community want? How does it want to project its destination, its home as a destination? What is it that it wants to offer to the visitor? So that bit, I think we offer, so far in the traditional form of tourism has always been ignored, but I think that needs to come up in the priority list, for one. There are other things, for example, there are certain destinations. It could be just a small region, it could be a mountain range, for instance, which or an archaeological site that are sensitive. You need to think about what is the carrying capacity of this particular destination. How many people can it take per day, per year? that needs to decide whether it's going to be a mass tourism destination or it's going to be, a premium sort of a destination where it's not that easy or where it's expensive to get to, for example, Bhutan. So all of that, there needs to be a strong informed thinking behind it. There needs to be a strategy behind it before it goes into, implementation, before the destination starts getting built. What are the hotels? What is the personality of this destination? What are the hotels that would do justice to that personality of this destination? Is it a tribal area? And can you suddenly turn it into a theme park, an adventure park? So there's so many different layers and levels to a destination. And destination development at a very high level looks at all of these individual factors before bringing that entire destination together and then developing it.
It's good news to hear that destinations, countries, governments are actually looking at things from that high level and that 360 development rather than simply building yet another hotel.
Yes.
That's very encouraging. I mean, Ras Al Khaimah is a very good example of that with the development that they have undertaken. It's all been very strategic.
Yes. Ras Al Khaimah started with, a written master plan, a destination strategy. I remember all of us were given this little booklet that we had to, absorb, and all the further development that we thought of, the products that we thought of, had to be in line with that particular strategy. So yes, I applaud, that's that approach towards destination development. And I would really hope that a lot more destinations, countries and regions, whoever the decision makers are, would, apply such an approach as well.
Very interesting. Who has inspired you along the way?
It's a difficult question to answer because I haven't yet been able to answer that for myself. I don't think I find inspiration in people yet, but perhaps just the world. Travel inspires me. The different situations and contexts around that I see in the world, that inspire me. When I talked about that migration crisis in India and how tourism could alleviate, perhaps, that issue to some extent, that inspires me. When I think about tourism's evolution so far, how, it was at one point a privilege, then over the years, over decades, it went through a democratization of sorts. And now, the end result of which we're seeing now in terms of mass tourism, how there are more bucket lists, how there are more Instagram-fueled travel aspirations, more flights being taken, more hotels being built, and the impact that's having on our world, how it's contributing to the climate crisis. These sorts of things, when I observe them around me, that's sort of, where I get my inspiration. And every time I find a step forward towards the solution, I get excited. That high that I feel inspires me and fuels me further. So it's difficult to say if there's a person that inspires me, but I find inspiration all around me in different contexts and situations.
Where do you see your future?
I've had a very iterative career so far. I started in management consulting in the private sector, worked at a big tech giant, had an entrepreneurial startup, worked at the government, and now I'm doing my own thing. I see myself continuing in this. I think I finally found my fit in a way. So I would love to, work independently the way that I'm doing. At the same time, like I talked about, I would love to work at the tourism policy level. I'd love to solve a lot of those problems. I'm still too young in my consulting practice to bag those kinds of projects, but that's what I aspire for. First, to gain the experience, to educate myself along the way, and when I'm ready, to really be able to deliver at that level.
If you could do anything, if you could choose anything, what would your ideal project be?
It would definitely be with the Ministry of Tourism in India. I'm bullish on India. I'm extremely passionate towards working in India and for India. So I would love to work with the government of India. and you know, helping it become, helping India become, you know, the best destination on every count. So that would be my dream project, to help the country, to help the government do that.
And as you mentioned, it could alleviate some of the migration issues. Precisely. Some of the poverty in the villages and the countryside.
Absolutely.
And stop people migrating constantly to the cities.
Yeah. Ultimately, those are the problems that I would want to solve through tourism. Tourism is a vehicle. It has immense amount of power to change lives. I now, after, you know, having worked in it a little bit, I truly believe in that. And I would love to use tourism as a vehicle to deliver that kind of change.
Knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to your younger self?
I'm still exploring and learning myself. But you know, if I look back at my experiences and the lessons that I've learned, I think what I would tell myself or any other woman, any other little girl at this point would be to be brave in our ambitions, to not hold ourselves back when we think there's something that we want to do. I'm currently charting a path which is extremely ambiguous, but I find very exciting. And I love what I see in the future, even though it seems a little distant. To take chances, to take risks, informed ones, but do so. I also think it's very important to seek financial independence, because it's empowering. There was a time when I didn't, you know, count it one of my priorities, but now I do. And thankfully I've reached that stage as well. And perhaps also to be acutely aware of the imposter syndrome and to actively fight it. I think, you know, I'm just rambling. I'm thinking out loud. And these are the things that, you know, I would have told my younger self. This is what I would tell any young girl or any woman at any stage in her career.
Great advice. And the youngsters coming up, maybe thinking of tourism as a career path, or those who've started on a different career path but have an interest in tourism, what would you advise them if they're really interested in getting into the tourism world?
So the industry is quite fragmented and ambiguous. And what helped me was having an idea of what really excited me. Generally, you know, I knew that, for instance, I love working at the policy level. This is an inclination I've had for a long time. So I've been always interested in the works governments do. I had also learned by this time, you know, through my very iterative career path, by this time that I love working at the strategy level, at the early stage level. I'm not very good at operations and you know, the downstream things. So being honest to myself about that helped. And also, you know, tourism and travel has been a passion area personally for me anyway. I've been a passionate, compulsive traveler all my life. So being aware, you know, first of your own self, what your interests and your skills are, and then finding a parallel in the tourism industry. And it's not going to be easy because there are no straightforward paths in this industry. Unfortunately, there aren't. So it may not be that easy, but you have to give yourself the opportunity to try and figure it out. But starting with a level of self-awareness, I would think.
Fantastic advice. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us before we bring this to a close?
I think I've said plenty. I can't think of anything else that I could add at this point.
It sounds like you've been very busy during the last couple of years, and there's a lot more to do as well.
Yes, and it helps me wake up every day. I find it extremely exciting.
That's fantastic. I mean, that really is inspirational for people to know, and for people to know that there are different career paths. Just because you've studied one thing at university doesn't mean you're stuck with that. There's Absolutely. Always the opportunity to find what excites you and to go after it and to change Absolutely. Your life.
And we should allow ourselves those opportunities to reinvent ourselves. Why not?
You know? Yeah, no longer do we have to follow the same career path all
exactly.
our lives.
Exactly.
The world is open. Minu, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And I look forward to following your career.
Thank you so much. I've had so much fun chatting with you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.